and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Okay, tonight our 40-minute speaker, and I'm so happy to announce her. She's so cool. Is Veronica? She's really from LA, but she lives here in San Clemente. Veronica.
I'm Veronica, alcoholic. And I have to say, my head is blank. And I really don't even know where to start. I just don't. So I'm going to be making pauses. And I have some support people in the audience. Keep it clean. Beth is here, hairstylist for Afro Beauty Check. And just Julie's here, So, Julie called me last week, and she's like, Veronica, I'm speaking on the 4th, at this meeting, Aragon. And I was like, okay, I'll be there. And she's like, but I gave her your phone number. And I was like, Julie, damn. And I was like, okay, that's fine. So she called, and my first thing was, okay, if I do this, it has to be soon, because my head will go there. I need 72-hour window. Any further time between me speaking, it's not going to happen. So I've been shaking my head clear, because I think too much, and I didn't want it to be rehearsed, because it just doesn't flow right. If it's rehearsed, I'll make a mistake. So, let's see. I just celebrated 7 years in August, and I should have had a party, and I'm not even one to have parties for myself, even though I like presents wrapped with bows, but I... And the reason why this birthday was special for me is because I passed my relapse point. And, I had 6.5 years, and I went out. And so for me to pass that point, I celebrated 1 through 6 before. So going through it again, I was like, yeah, happy birthday, it just wasn't a big deal. I didn't care. But when I hit 7, I'm like, okay, so my 10-year, if I make it to 10-year, and I say if because it is so one day at a time for me, that it's going to be a serious party. So, and I want presents. So, nice thing. No, little angels with number 10s on them. I want presents. But, I don't know. My story's changed so many times, especially with my relapse. I guess the first thing I can say is that I'm really, really grateful for this program. And I'm grateful for the steps. I'm grateful for the traditions. I'm grateful for the suggestions made by the healthy people that are actually working this program. I'm grateful for my sponsor, who's supposed to be sitting in that chair. And, and I'm just grateful for the people who didn't, look down on me when I came back. Because truthfully, and I can relate, because ego is what was part of the reason that took me out. And so I remember when I identified as a newcomer, I remember a few people looked down their noses at me. And... It wasn't a few, it was a lot of people. And we're talking from newcomers to double digits and to their second double digits. And I was like, okay, delete, 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 delete. I deleted all the fools. Because I was, I was like, if you look down, your nose at me, I don't like you anyway. But I don't know. It was hard coming back. But one of the things that was the hardest for me was I actually checked in the Ashland house. And my relapse wasn't that long. It was less than 90 days. But I remember calling Julie, and I had 2 backup people, because when there's a bed available at Ashland house, they call you and say, you know what, look, there's a bed available, but three other people know about the bed, whoever gets here first. It's first come, first basis. So she came and got me, and she was at work and only had a limited time span, so she could only take me part of the way. And then there was someone else that met us in the Coco's parking lot and on Crown Valley and the 5, and they're like, come on, throw your stuff in the car. It was crazy. So I was running, got to Ashland, and when I got there, you know, the people are like, oh, are you here on a panel? And I'm like, oh, no, damn. You know, and I was like, no, I'm drinking 40s and smoking crack, you know. And they were like, well, damn, we just heard you share, you know. We just heard you share at the Canyon Club, right? And I'm like, yeah. Oh, there's my sponsor. She's amazing. Yeah. And your seat's up here. And next to my purse. And I was, you know, it was so hard to get back into the groove of things. But there was a lady there. It was my fourth, or was it my sixth night there? It was like my fourth night there, and they were having a step study. And this lady had also lost 6 years. And she said, look, Veronica, I'm going to tell you straight out. She goes, the only thing that has changed for you is your date. She said, I've seen you speak. I know who your sponsor is. I know how you worked your program. So you didn't lose any of that knowledge. You just put it in a little box and threw it in the back of your closet for a while. So basically what you have to do is you got to pull out that box again and you got to reactivate the tools. And she said, and that's what I had to do. So get off your pity pot. You can sit here and be ashamed as long as you want. And it just kind of, it was like the wake up call that I needed. And which completely woke me up that night was they shared on a step that I had experience with, and I was able to share on it, you know, and in the past. And so that, it just woke me up, you know. The steps for me, I have to say, you know, the first three steps, you know, is my complete surrender steps. That's me turning it over. That's me crawling to this program because I tried everything else and just basically turning it over and admitting and just and moving on, you know, because after I did those first three steps, I was able to move on to the next level. OK, and then that was, you know, taking it from 4, 5, 6, and 7. That was me just listing and taking responsibility for everything, you know, and I remember this, I'm going to jump back to way before I even realized. When I first relocated here from Los Angeles, I remember going to the old San Clemente Club, and I saw my sponsor. And, you know, she had just this glow and this grace about her. And I didn't believe her. I didn't believe any of the people. I didn't believe the people at the podium. Like, yeah, they're really just full of it. They're still drinking. They're still smoking. And, you know, and I had to follow her. I remember following her. She didn't know it. Or maybe she did. But I remember going to her church. I remember going to her church and checking her out. Like, is she really walking and talking all this, you know? And she was really involved, singing in the choir. And, okay, well, she has a relationship with a higher power, really. And then she's showing up at these meetings. And, you know, I remember I spied on her for a long time. And then finally, I was like, okay, she's my sponsor, you know? And then, you know, I remember her sharing about the promises and her sharing along with a lot of people the promises are going to happen after, you know, 8 and 9. And I remember I had thought about, you know, I had tried everything. I had tried the alcohol. I tried the drugs. I tried the shopping, the guys and the things that, you know, we can easily obsess on to make us feel better, you know. And or just to camouflage whatever it is. And I remember I tried everything else. It didn't work, but I wanted those promises because the promises feel so, you know, it just sounded so good. And I was like, okay, so we jump into 8 and 9. And it was hard because, you know, in doing, you know, 4, 5, 6, and 7, you know, not only did I not become that victim anymore, I had a huge list to complete 8 and 9 by. And everything I thought I was a victim for, I was no longer a victim. I was actually the terror in so many other people's lives. And so when it came to making amends, I kind of just had to pull out the information I got from the earlier steps, and then it had to start. And it's funny because I called texted my sponsor this week, and I was letting her know, you know, how grateful I was, because in doing 8 and 9, and she had me do it all, you know, in doing 8 and 9, I had to not only make the verbal amends, it was continuous living amends, but, you know, one of the hard things was the financial amends. Because I had this debt, you know, I had this major credit card, I had this list of credit cards. She made me get my credit reports from all three bureaus. She had me write a letter, a general letter, you know, same one, just leave it blank up here and leave the date blank and we'll just fill in all the creditors. And I had to, you know, I mean, I made every single amends that was possible on earth, mailed those out, and I was paying my bills today. And I mean, this week when I, you know, and I was reflecting on all of this, and I was like, wow, I'm paying my bills, I'm debt free, and that was because of, you know, the habits and me doing those steps, you know, thoroughly, and maybe not perfectly, but thoroughly as she suggested, and I, and the best I could, and so I have to say that now, you know, 10, 11, and 12. You know, that's just me staying accountable and responsible on a daily basis and living this program and carrying the message the best I can on a daily basis and hopefully for the rest of my life. I don't know. I'm really grateful. I have a lot to be grateful for. I don't have a story of, you know, coming from a family where I was abused and, you know, I didn't grow up in the ghetto and there wasn't people selling drugs outside my window. You know, my dad worked, my mom didn't start working until we were all out of the house and adults, you know, we had dinner around the table every night. We went on family vacations. We lived in a great neighborhood. I trick-or-treated at the mayor's house every year and got my annual Tootsie Rolls. And, you know, I don't know. I had a good childhood, you know. And so I can't say that, you know, that's the reason why I drank. Truthfully, the reason why I started drinking is because I tried it and I tried some other stuff and I liked it, you know. I liked how it tasted. I like how I felt. I like that I actually thought I had wings growing out of my back, and I thought I was flying with every step I took. And I liked it. I liked the whole process of, you know, the whole process of doing it. And, I, you know, my L.A. scene at that time when I started was very fun. It was in the 80s. You know, my high school was in Hollywood. You know, so I went to school with a lot of rockers, punk rockers, and so I did the scene in full form, you know, and did the Troubadour, Rainbow, all of those crazy rooms, did the club scene, and I had a blast, I gotta say, you know. And then there was a time, you know, years went by on that, you know, living that lifestyle, that, you know, everything progressed and it all advanced. And I was still living at home, and I had a younger sister and brother, and my mother and father were like, look, you can't keep coming in here smelling like alcohol, smelling like drugs, and you have a younger sister and brother who look up to you because you're the oldest, and so you got to go. You either clean it up or you got to go. And of course, I didn't clean it up, so I had to go. And I remember I had this little refrigerator, and one of the first places I lived in, I say one of the first places because I was evicted place after place, because I didn't know how to live on my own, you know. And I remember the very first thing I did was I didn't fill it up with food, with vegetables, with milk and water and grape juice. I didn't do any of that. I went straight to the store and I bought tall cans of Old English. And I filled it up. And I remember opening it, and it had a glow. You know, they're like gold. I was so proud. I was like, my dad would call, how's it going? I was like, I went grocery shopping. You know, I was so proud. And that's how it was. You know, I was starving to death. I remember washing my first load of clothes. The whites, they turned pink. And I freaked. All my whites turned pink 2 or 3 times. And I, you know, it was just a mess. Got evicted from there. Went to go live with some crazy lady in Beverly Hills. And she ended up being one of the biggest cokeheads I've ever met in my life. And then I got introduced to Peruvian flake, the shiny crystallized stuff. And that started a whole new whirlwind. And got evicted from there because I fell in love with the Peruvian flake. And then I went to the next place, and then I remember walking down the street, coming to visit my parents, because I could go there and get groceries from them, because I didn't have any money, because I was spending all my money on alcohol and drugs, and I didn't pay my rent. So I remember walking, and I saw my brother playing, and he ran into the house. I thought he was all excited to see me. But I was walking, and I remember I had on this mini skirt, and that was the time where you wore mini skirts and kids without the shoelaces, and a little white t-shirt, and I thought I was just the cutest thing, you know. But he ran in the house because what he saw was sticks. He saw my legs, and they were sticks. It was like stick, knee, stick. And so he ran in the house, and I remember him pulling my mom and my dad out. I remember it so well. And he was crying. I was getting closer and closer, and he was crying. And they were like, what's wrong with you? You know, and then they fed me. They made me move back in because they thought I was going to die because I was that thin. And so I stayed there, same stuff, you know. I ended up, my mom's like, you know, you gotta go again because you're not getting it together. But we can't help you anymore, because at this time, they had already put me in the care unit at Cedars Eye Hospital. And they had already tried so many things. And so they had given up. And so they said, look, you gotta go, but you need to go get help. Just do what you gotta do. You know, if you go get help, you can come back here. But if you leave and don't go get help, you can't come back. So I went to the phone book, and in the front of the phone book, in the yellow part, there's like the alcohol and drug abuse hotline. And you call that number, and I was like, look, I need to get into a program. My parents are not going to pay for it anymore. I'm not on their insurance. I need somewhere to go. And luckily for us, there are places where the county pays for, you know, like, everything. They sign you up for every service possible. I remember they signed me up for like welfare, disability, and food stamps. And whatever they got, they deducted the price from the total daily rate. And then I think I ended up paying like a balance of like $45 a day. And I went into this place, but my parents were so through with me that I remember my mom was taking, they had called and said that there was a bed. I got on a waiting list for Claire in Santa Monica, just Acton out in Antelope Valley in the desert, American Hospital in Pomona. It was like a list of all these county places where you can go and still go today for the same thing. And I remember them saying, okay, well, if you can't get a ride, these are your pickup points. You either need to get to the women's jail, we pick up people from there at this time, or you need to get to the men's county jail, we pick up people from there at this time. All of you, mental hospital, if you get there, or if you get down to Skid Row to the wine guard. And I was like, okay, Skid Row it is. I remember my mom was taking my sister and brother to school. She's like, well, what time are they coming to pick you up? They dropped me off. I remember my mom freaking out because there was people slamming. There was people drinking. There was people sleep on the street. There was people over there fighting, having a nice bloody fight. And they were like, are you dropping her off for Acton? She'll be all right. Don't worry. She'll stay in here behind the gate. And the guy came out. She's like, okay. So they helped me get my stuff out. I waited for the van to drive up, and I was just filled, you know, Skid Row was the first stop. Then we stopped at all these places, picked up prisoners and, you know, all these different people, you know. And so the van was full, and I remember the guy looking at me saying, "Are you drunk? Are you loaded?" And I was like, "No." But I remember keeping my eye, after we passed, like, the residential area, I remember keeping my eye on the railroad track. I saw this railroad track all the way through the desert to this rehab. And I was like, okay, as long as I keep my eye on the railroad track, I could get back, you know? But as soon as we turned off, got into this location, it was this beautiful oasis in the middle of the desert. The first thing I saw was this 6'2" brunette biker with a swastika about this big on his neck. And I fell in love. Lost complete focus. Found out his name was Larry Quackenbush, and he was my main focus, you know. And of course, it didn't work out because he found another biker chick with a swastika, Phyllis, and they live happily ever after. And I was devastated, and I left rehab devastated, and I'm still devastated. No, just kidding. But I remember I never really had focus because I was all about Larry and a swastika. And he was the finest man, I got to say. I have to say, he's still fine. Yes. Brown hair and blue eyes does it to me every time. But anyways, I left there, stayed sober for quite some time, 4 years, and did the same thing over again, relapsed, ended up back there, and they were like, "Look, Veronica, you can't come back here anymore. You know, you're going to either have to get it together or, you know, what didn't you do the last time, you know?" And I was like, "We don't think, you know, you keep going home, you keep getting these great jobs," and that's one thing, you know, like after my relapse, Julie, I gotta say this, Julie, I'm sorry, I don't need to, like, put you on blast or anything, but this woman can relapse and then get the best job, like, in 12 days. "Oh, I'm 12 days sober. Oh, I just got a great job." She's running things. Got a great new apartment, brand new car, brand new boyfriend. She's like the comeback kid of relapse. So I'm just like, she's my freaking hero. Okay. So I just knew I never did. I never took the complete suggestions that they offered me at those rehabs. They were like, "Look, you have all these different choices of sober livings." And I was like, okay. They were like, "Okay, well, you know, your 90 days is up. What do you want to do?" I was like, "I'm not ready to leave." You know, I ended up staying a whole another 90 days. And I remember it was exactly before the 6 month period. I went into the office and I said, "Okay, I'm going to go to a sober living." You know, and the reason why I went to it, I chose that, and it was so attractive, is because there was this guy that had came on a panel up to the rehab, and he's in these rooms. Ron, some of you guys might know him, but he brought a panel up there, and he was talking about all these sober livings that they opened in San Clemente. And I remember San Clemente because we used to stop through San Clemente on our way to Rosarita, you know, me and my friends. And we'd stop in all these towns, and especially San Diego County towns. And I remember I always said, "One day I'm going to live in one of those little beach towns. They're so cute, you know." And so I was like, "San Clemente, you mean on the way to Rosarita Beach?" And he's like, "Yeah." So he gave me his contact information. I said, "I need you guys to call this guy, find me a sober living." They did, right over here on Escalonis. I got to live there. Come to find out, it was a total racket, but serious racket. And the owners of the buildings didn't even know they were running a sober living in there. It was pathetic, but it served a purpose, you know, because I was getting to meetings on a daily basis. I found a job at that time. I had banking experience. How I came to San Clemente with 8 years banking experience, that's a whole nother thing. And but I ended up getting a job within a week, I never learned how to drive. Don't ask. I was, 32 years old, never learned how to drive. So I didn't realize that, you know, San Clemente was like all curvy and all these hills. And I was like, okay, then the public transportation here isn't like L.A. and New York. It isn't like buses like this. You can't just walk to any corner and get a ride. So, but luckily it was a small community bank. I was able to walk there. it was right behind the San Clemente Friendship Center. Everything worked out. Everything served its purpose, you know. And the women at the time that were in my life, they were all trying to teach me how to drive. It was a mess. You know, it was a mess. I was just like, you know, going everywhere. And they were like, stop looking immediately. It was amazing. But it was one of the best experiences in my life. And it was a blessing, because if I had learned how to drive, I'd be dead, or I would have killed someone, or I would have a police record. You know, and luckily I don't have, I've never been arrested. And how that happened, who knows. Did the sober living, stalked her for a little bit, spied on her, found out that she was legit, started working the steps, ended up getting my own place that I still live in 13 years later. Jeez Louise. But I love it. You know, it's mine. I live by myself. I live a block from the beach. It is the cutest thing. And it's small. It's a studio, so I've had to redecorate the whole thing 4 times just to stay sane. But it's good, you know, and I love it. It's my little castle. And I got to say, you know, I think about that. I mean, I can't wait to go home and take a bath and get in my bed and throw whatever I'm going to do with my hair and just start reading my book again. I'm reading an amazing book. But it's just, that's just one blessing I have today. And I'm losing track, Julie. You know, learned how to drive, ended up getting a car. And it was funny because I kept going, my credit was still bad at the time. It was raising a little bit, but it was still in the fives, you know. So they were all like, okay, well, you're not going to be able to get a car, you know, under 25%. I was like, okay, well, I can go borrow money from the mom, you know, cheaper than that. So, miraculously, some loving people in AA were like, look, we love you. We trust you. We know you make money. We're going to buy you a car, and we're going to put it on a 0% credit card, and you just pay it off. And this is how quick you do it. And they bought me a car. It was my first, I thought that little Geo Prism 19, I don't know, it was like 80 something, and it had like 5 million miles on it. I was driving a Rolls Royce, and it was the happiest thing in my life, you know. And finally, my credit started jumping up to the 6s and 7s, and, you know, my poor little Rolls Royce was dying, and, you know, I was able to get a car at a decent rate, you know. At a fair rate, not, you know, not mob rates. And you know, at this time, and also around this time, I had, so I'm driving around thinking I'm all that. And at this time, I decided that, you know, banking has a glass ceiling. There's only so far you can go in banking. I don't care how educated you are. You know, and I knew that I wanted to be creative. I wanted something I was interested in. And so I jumped into the fashion industry, and I started on the loading docks as a merchandiser. And another miracle of the program, I got promoted above my own manager in 90 days. And all of a sudden, I was an executive hire with a hiring, firing power. They were flying me to New York 3 to 4 times a year. And it was, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it, you know, and I was like, wait, now I'm saving money, debt-free now by this time, and I lost my damn mind. I have to tell you, I lost my mind. I was working 60, 70 hours a week. I was an executive. I had the power to hire and fire, and I didn't need the program anymore, you know. Not only did I not need it, but I didn't have the energy or time, and I was just too good, you know, for the program anymore. And so basically, I got to say, that's when it started to get real hard for me. My relapse, the most painful part of my relapse, was actually before I picked up that drink. I don't know about you guys, but for me, I went crazy. I basically forgot that I was even in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know. My ego caused me pain and suffering. And I was so crazy that I didn't even, when, by the time I realized I was relapsed, loaded, and drunk, it was like days later. I didn't even cross my mind that I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had been sober for 6 years. You know, it didn't even cross my mind. Hit a bottom, a hard bottom. I ended up going to Skid Row. quite a bit, and because that's all I knew, and thank God I didn't know where to get the stuff around here, you know, but that's all I knew. I would drive down to San Pedro and 7th, because I knew that's where it was. I knew we didn't get alcohol anywhere, and it was just a mess. It was a big mess, and I started to reach out. I let a few people know, and then that's when I contacted Ashlyn, and you know, it's been okay. It's been okay. Julie came, got me there, got me to Crown Valley, and then the other stop, they got me there. And you know, I just, if it wasn't for that lady saying to me, look, Veronica, the only thing that changed is your date. You just need to start working the tools like you did before. You know, if it wasn't for her, I don't know if my ego would have allowed me to start working this program. And, you know, and just get back on it. And thank God, you know, my sponsor showed, because I had contacted her a few times, and she was like, you know, I think I called her in complete insanity, you know. And I was out there. I called her for a while I was out there drinking and using. But then when, by the time I called her from the, you know, sober living, she was so done with my insanity that she wasn't even comprehending the fact that I was actually in a detox. And then she's like, okay, click. But then I guess she finally listened to a message, and then she made the decision, okay, I'll work with this fool again. So someone came up to the room and was like, some lady's here. It says, she's your sponsor. And I was like, what? She won't even take my calls. And, you know, so I ran down there, and it was her. And as she had me do the steps through the big book, we started reading from the very first blank page. And thank God, you know, that I got to start all over from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because the program is in the first 164 pages. You know, but she had me read every single line, you know. And there's a thing after the 12 steps, 12 traditions, there's the 12 concepts. I didn't even understand what the 12 concepts were, you know. But with her, I was able to get educated on what each aspects of those 12 groups do for this program. And I'm just glad you showed up. Now, this is going to sound really crazy, what I'm about to say right now. I seriously think, whether you're an alcoholic or not, that it just absolutely makes sense to take a drink. Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm saying that only because I had the biggest loss in my life 5 years ago, and this is the anniversary of my dad's death right now. See, my dad was my best friend. You know, I told him everything. I told him, everything. You know, I would call him when I would relapse. I called him the first time I was with a guy. I called him every time I got my heart broken. My best friend, my biggest cheerleader. And he died. And I watched him die for 5 days. I watched what the body does as it shuts down before he took his last breath. And I have to tell you, during those 5 days, it made absolute sense for me to take a drink. But I just can't. You know, I just can't. Now, if I could, hey, party on. You know, I can't. I can't drink. I'm not allowed to drink. My body is allergic to it. And, but it does make absolute sense, I think, in some situations. I'm not saying if someone loses a family member, if you break a nail, go and get drunk. It just, I'm just being honest with it. And you know, my family dynamic is completely changed. I didn't even go home last year for Thanksgiving because it's like I always see him at the end of the table. And I still smell him. But I know, you know, I get to travel a lot today because my sponsor has enabled me by doing 8 and 9 to, you know, she taught me to save money and to pay my debts. So I get to travel, so I was able to go see his grave the first time since we laid him to rest in Georgia. And it put some closure on it. And I got to put my chip on there. And and I don't know if that hole is ever going to be filled, but it's okay, because, you know, I don't know, I just wanted to share that with you, because it's what I'm going through right now. So Julie, thank you so much for, as Amanda would say, throwing me under the bus and giving her my phone number to share, because it's taken me out of my head, you know, and I know my father's listening to me. And I just want my cheerleader back. I know you guys like me and you cheer for me, but I want him back. So, the blessing in sobriety is 4 months before he died. I got to take him on a fishing trip for a week in Northern California. And we caught 65 fish. You know, bass, perch, trout. And, you know, I know today that I'm a redneck trapped in a black woman's body. and that is like one of my biggest pleasures in life. I cannot live without fishing. I like walking through the woods at night, you know, and I don't know. I just came back from Alabama and Georgia, and you know what? I had the best redneck adventure that I just have to tell you. You know, I got to play with big knives and run through the woods and go fishing. And you know, it was just amazing. And, you know, and I got to go see my dad's grave, you know, and, you know, I just, you know, this program is amazing. I want to, you know, I'm a firm believer in balance, you know, and my sponsor helped me get to that point, because I'm not one of those AAs that, you know, my AA isn't my life anymore. Now, it was for a long time. It was 100%. It was my main focus. But one of the things my sponsor made me do was get a passport. She's like, I was like, why do you want me to get a passport? She's like, well, I travel all over the world, so it's about time you start, you know? And so I got to take my first trip abroad after I changed my career again to something I've always wanted to do since I was a little girl. And part of the reason why I did that is when I lost my father the year before he died, he was coming up on retirement, and I remember him saying, when I retire, I'm going to do this. When I retire, I'm going to do that. And I was like, okay, he retired, died. So that was like an eye opener for me. Like, I got to do this now. I got to do what I want to do now. I need to fish like the redneck I am. I need to do, you know, I need to pursue the career that I love. I mean, and I'm still pursuing it, you know. I have people in this room that I go work with on a regular basis. Well, not lately, because she's a world traveler, too. And that are helping me get to the next level. And it's doing hair, by the way. And, you know, I'm excited about it. I don't know when the doors are going to start opening, because they haven't yet. But I'm just keeping myself in tune, and I'm doing that. But I wouldn't have been able to do any of that, you know, without this program and without being sober, you know. Yeah, and Julie just reminded me, well, don't forget about your New York trip with Jennifer, you know. And, you know, I'm able to go meet friends in different states that, you know, I ate so much on that trip. I have to tell you, oh, I love food too. I'm a pig. So I ate like I was an NFL linebacker in training. It was one of the best experiences in my life was the food in New York. And but I got to do it without Bloomingdale's. I got to do it as a tourist, you know. And it was funny because, you know, it was great. I wanted to do the Mr. Big sedan rides. I did those. I did a few taxi rides. I did the subway. You know, I went down to I saw the Statue of Liberty for the first time, and it was just amazing. I don't think I'm going to be able to go to 40 minutes. Sorry. But I don't know, you guys. I guess the bottom line to me sharing is how I did it may not be the way you need to do it. I just know that the suggested way to do it out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and from, like I said earlier, the healthy people in these rooms that are actually working and living this program. I see. Julie, help. Blank. It may not work for you, but I have to do it that way. I have to take a lot more suggestions than I do these days. A few years ago, my sponsor was like, you know what? You've stepped up to the level of pull-ups. Didn't you call it pull-ups? Yeah, she's like, you're like growing. You're like in the pull-up stage. And, you know, and then now if I call her with the situation, I can't call her with a situation unless I have the solution I apply to it. You know, there's like no point. And it's great. Let's see. The steps will set you free. Okay, so if there's anyone in this room that's like, you know, oh, step four, I've heard that so many times. Oh, step four, it's just so horrible and it's taken me 5 years to do it. You might as well drink now, okay? I'll drive you to the liquor store. You know, I'm not taking you to Skid Row, but I'll take you to the liquor store. You might as well drink now because you most likely are addicted to the chaos. You like the drama and you like the pain and the attention, you know? The big book, I mean, I remember hearing when I did step four, and the only reason why I'm bringing this up again is because I hear so much about it in this dramatic way, negative way. You know, I remember calling my sponsor, like, well, you know, because she said, do it out of the big book. And it tells you, you just make these columns, boom, boom, boom. She's like, you don't have to write paragraphs, just bullet point it, because we're going to talk about it when we do five. So there's no point in, like, you know, making a bullet point a paragraph. I had to call her like five times. I think I called her a couple of times, like at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, and I'm like, okay, well, I just did the, you know, I just wrote down the list. Is that it? Yeah. Did you do it like that? Did you do it like it says in the big book? You have the columns right in front of you, and you make the columns, you write down the list of people, situations, places, and things, and what did it affect, you know? And it's really not that difficult. And yeah, so I just, God, I'm like losing my train of thought. It's nap time. Yeah, so you guys, just work the steps. It's not that difficult. All of this stuff. There's something here that's going to give you suggestions, you know, and teach you how to do it. The big book, you got the 12 and 12. If you have an iPhone, you can put in AA big book, and then you put in like a topic. It pulls up the page and the paragraph. You don't even need to buy a book. Oh, sorry. You know, I mean, it's sad, you know. I mean, eventually it'll be good for the environment, tree-wise, but, you know. But you can pull it up on the internet, you can pull it up on your iPhone, and you can just, you know, pick it and just read it and just do it, you know. Get a sponsor, you know. Unfortunately, I have a handful of people in my life that are not going to meetings anymore, and they think they know it all. They're exactly where I was before I drank, and I can't talk to them that much because they're in that insanity stage. And And I love these people, but they got to go through what they have to go through. But the steps, sponsor being of service, I'm not really one for sponsoring. I hate it. Do not call me. You know, Alicia's dying. Okay. But I'm of service the best way I can. I go to Skid Row a lot. You know, I need men's socks, everyone. Don't throw out your socks. Save them in the bag. Give them to me. Desperately need men's socks down there. I'm down there. Well, lately it's been once a month, but I usually go once every 3 months. And for some reason, I'm really comfortable down there. I don't know if that's a sign of future homelessness, or I'm just really comfortable down there, and I never feel like threatened. It's a place that I think a lot more people need to go. And if you're really comfortable thinking you have it all together, go down there. And you can talk to people, and there's people that used to own blocks, cities, countries, and states, smoking crack and drinking 40s. You know, all nationalities, all religions, all ages, okay? There's people down there, and it's absolutely amazing, you know? And then there's people down there that are clean and sober, living in the shelters, because that's how they have to start out. And that's part of my giving back, you know, because I just know how I would feel if I was homeless and didn't have socks and my feet were cold. I mean, I'm freezing right now. And you got to have a relationship with a power greater than yourself, you know. I grew up in a very, very Jewish neighborhood. Love my rabbis and love my Jewish friends. I have Muslim friends. I got Buddhist friends. I got Hindus in my phone book. I got all kinds of folks from all different religions. All I'm saying is that you need to have a relationship with a power greater than yourself. And before I relapsed, I was the power greater than myself. And I worshipped me and thought I was all that. And then Larry Quackenbush from the Desert Rehab, of course. And then damn, he was fine. Swastika and all. But you have to have a relationship with a power greater than yourself. And and if you can do those things, and you can be completely honest, because there's no secrets in these rooms. We've done it all. Your story, you didn't do anything that she didn't do, and she didn't do anything that he didn't do, and I know I did everything you did, so it's like, you know, so you're not unique, you're not going to say anything that's going to offend anybody, you just need to get it all out there. If you're truly, truly done, you got to get it all out there, and you got to surrender it. And I think that is it. Did I cover it? Are you sure? Amanda? Okay, so thank you for letting me share. I hope I carried the message the best way I could. And just don't relapse. You don't have to. It's a waste of time. Thank you.